Top of the 8 o'clock hour here on our nation's capital. You're tapped into the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham, taking you up to 10 o'clock tonight here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. If you want to keep the conversation going with me off air on social media, it is at @NELL_BTP. Same handle on all social media platforms, X, Instagram, TikTok, however you want to consume your boy. You could do so at @NELL_BTP. Continuing to empty out my Washington Commanders training camp notebook, we'll be joined by one half of the Beltway Football Podcast, Mitch Tischler, coming up at about 8:30. We'll pick his brain on what he was paying attention to out there today at training camp practice number one for the Washington Commanders. Fellas trying to build off of last year and that appearance in the NFC Championship game. The big news of today, I guess, officially no Terry McLaurin as he was put on the reserve did not report list. There was a photo that surfaced of McLaurin out in Ashburn earlier today doing yoga. So we know he is at least in the area. But if have those conversations progressed the way that some folks are reporting they have? Probably not. But I will say this, and we'll get into Terry in more detail a little bit later on in the hour. The two sides, I firmly believe, need each other. Like, honestly, like I believe that the two sides need each other. But I also say this, and I said it this morning when I joined the Junks. We're still a long ways away from this thing getting resolved, I feel like. And if the Commanders are not willing to eclipse $30 million annually, if they're only trying to give a small raise, as guys like Jeremy Fowler is reporting, he's set to make $23.2 this year. Let's just say they're offering him $26-27. Like that to me, like if you're going to die on that hill over a couple of million bucks over a face of the franchise, I don't know if I like your judgment and your decision-making, but like I always say about AP and company, we're at the mercy of the evaluator. I get it. But, man, I don't know. It's maybe the first uh-oh for our guy Adam Peters. We will talk about the Terry McLaurin situation in more detail a little bit later on. But right now, the floor is yours, man. 1-800-636-1067. Emptying out my Washington Commanders notebook from day number one of training camp. I was out there, boots on the ground. Got to have a lot of valuable conversations out there on the practice field with players, media members, coaches, et cetera. Always a good time. Any chance we get to go out to Ashburn. And make sure you keep locked on the Fan all throughout training camp as you know we bring you our training camp coverage. I meant to say this as well, and how could I ever forget this? Training camp coverage this year on 106.7 The Fan. It's not your usual traditional NFL training camp coverage. Training camp coverage brought to you by our pals at Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Right now, taking your calls on all things related to Washington Commanders training camp. First day that fans can be out there is Sunday. What are you looking forward to seeing, and what questions do you have from the first couple of days? Let's go to Jason and Laurel wants to chime in. What's up, Jason?
Linnell, thank you so much for taking my call. How you doing, buddy?
Sure, man. I appreciate you calling, man. Love hearing from you, buddy. I hope all is well.
Hey, for
with
all
you
those people
yours,
out
man.
There, I saw you talking about this earlier, man. If you ever want to talk to Linnell, DM him, man. He always responds.
He's
got good stuff. I was so excited when I saw some of your reports from training camp this morning. I'm telling you, I was living for them. I got to make a commitment to you. I had such a great season last year, but I failed in one regard. I didn't go to a single event that you and Denton had at all last year.
Wow. You got to get out there,
Jason. That's not
going to
happen this year, man. I'm coming.
So I'll say this. I don't know if I'm allowed to announce this. Every away game, me and Denton will be live on location for the pregame show out at Old Ox Brewery in Ashburn, as well as in Fairfax. So that's every away game.
Well,
this
I commit
season,
to see you, brother. You're going to have to see my fat face at least on one of those.
Look, I definitely appreciate the support, brother. Glad you're doing well. What do you think, though? What's your biggest question for me coming out of day one of training
camp? I got a lot of things
camp?
I'm excited about, truly. you did such a great job last year talking about the sophisticated run game that they were going to do. And I do think they intended to do that, but I don't know that we had enough horsepower. This is by far the most talent we've had on the offensive line. Now, whether the O-line coach and the strength coach can get that out of them, we're going to see. Although I got to tell you, I think Ben Johnson is his name. I wasn't a fan of that hire. I think he did well last year with what he had. It's interesting to see throwing some more athleticism at him, what he's going to do with this group this year. And I think the screen game is going to be huge. First of all, Eckler is a huge
Hey, Jason,
receiver.
This is why I love when you call, Jason, because you're a smart cookie. They mark this, and Jason could co-sign it. They will have the best screen game in the National Football League next year.
Well, 100%
agree.
Green monster. And then so is Ankler.
And then the athletes that they now have up front, Jason, definitely lends itself to that.
Yeah, and the thing that gets me crazy, right, if we can get the defense going left and right for at-the-snap screen games, the up-the-middle is going to get better. And that was the thing that failed our ring. You talked earlier about how we ranked. But we really didn't have running, especially in the tail end of the season, unless it was Jaden.
Yeah.
And we had no inside game at all, hardly. So I think the screen game is going to really add to our run game and show us what kind of horsepower we have at the O-line. I saw some clips of Miller going against the young kid. I think that's great. I love iron sharpens iron. I heard Debo ran by somebody. He must not be that fat. Was really,
Debo had a tremendous day. And Jason, if you've heard me at all throughout this offseason, I am the leader of the Debo Samuel fan club. I do think whether Terry's here or not, I think he's going to be their best offensive weapon.
Yeah.
Jason, I appreciate you.
I think Eckler was that early last season. He was just
a weapon
in so many places. Debo's going to be used similar.
I agree with you about Eckler, Jason. The one thing that we slept on, the first man never got Austin Eckler down. I feel like he always was making somebody miss. Jason, I appreciate you as always, brother. I got a couple more guys I got to get to.
Give me one quick thing.
Yes,
I swear
indeed.
I'm out.
Just one quick thing I want to hit on.
So, listen, I love Terry. I got 3 Terry jerseys, and I want Terry to be part of this team. But I'm okay with Peters not overpaying him. And Terry's a great citizen, and that's what makes this thing so difficult is because he's such a great citizen. You kind of want to overpay him. But I tell you what, I think they get it done. But, guys, maybe they haven't got this done yet. I still think there's a play where Hendricks comes here. And if Hendricks comes here, get your Super Bowl tickets ready.
Ooh. Look, Jason, I'm in the minority with you. I'd still pick up the phone and call. I don't care if you got Von Miller or not. Appreciate the call as always, man. 1-800-636-1067. Robbie is out in Chevy Chase. Wants to chime in. What's going on, Robbie? How you doing, brother?
Hey, what's going on? So I don't want to go back and be a dead horse here, but I want to go back to the Terry situation.
Go ahead.
So I think a deal eventually does get done. And my concern isn't necessarily how much we end up paying him, but it's going to be the lost reps in training camp and over the summer.
Yeah.
Especially at a position at receiver when so much of it is timing and so much of that is being with your quarterback, with the team, getting everything down. Like, what's your take on that? How do you think that comes into play come week one if a deal gets done?
Dude, I think it's massive. I feel like I'm in the minority in terms of my panic level and my level of concern for where things stand. Just from a pure football standpoint, holding out, normally when guys hold out, especially if they hold out into the regular season, Robbie, injuries happen. Obviously, knock on wood that doesn't happen to Terry if he is able to report. But I think you hit it right on the head. Think about how their rapport struggled at times last year right off of the rip. Like, it felt like Terry McLaurin, in terms of his production at times, was hit or miss. Now, the numbers when Daniels targeted McLaurin is absolutely out of this world. But to your point, like, this is a new year. You got to rebuild that chemistry, rebuild that rapport. I know Jaden hosted a couple of throwing sessions this offseason. Curious to know whether or not Terry McLaurin was a part of those, Robbie. I definitely think you're on to something with that for sure.
Yeah, then also.
Go ahead again, Robbie. I lost you for a second, Robbie. Repeat that.
You at the same time, you have new receivers now in the room, and like you got to figure out how to work that as a unit.
Yeah, I totally agree. Real quick, Robbie, and I appreciate you calling as always. So, Jaden Daniels last year, including the playoffs, when targeting Terry McLaurin, had a 66% completion percentage, threw for 1,100 yards, 9 yards per attempt, and this is the staggering part. Jaden Daniels last year threw 25 touchdown passes, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm going to fact check that here real quick because I don't want to be looked at as a liar to you all. But, yeah, Jaden Daniels last year threw the air, threw 25 touchdown passes, good for 10th most in the NFL. 15 of those 25 touchdown passes went to Terry McLaurin. So if you're looking for a statistical reason as to why they got to get him back in the building, that is it. The other thing, too, on Terry here before we take another timeout, if he is not on this roster, who's your deep ball guy? Who's your big play threat? I know Debo, as soon as you get it in his hands, you get him in space and watch out. But, like, you lost De'Ami Brown. Terry's not in camp right now. Those two were responsible for a bevy of chunk plays for this offense last year. And one shortcoming that this offense had, and they were tremendous last year, the one shortcoming that they did have is it felt like they struggled at times to consistently create and generate the explosive play. It's why we saw so many 18, 19-play drives last year for this group. So I am super excited about when Terry gets here, but until he gets here, there will be some major questions from me. 1-800-636-1067. Let's go to Eiler out in Richmond, wants to chime in. What's going on, Eiler?
Hey, Lanell, this is Tyler in Richmond. How you doing?
Gotcha, Tyler. What's going on, brother?
Hey, what's up? I just wanted your thoughts on without McLaurin in camp, I think Debo Samuel is going to play a much bigger role. But who stood out to you at receiver other than Debo? Me personally, I think this is Luke McCaffrey's year to play a much bigger role.
I think, Tyler, Dan Quinn mentioned Luke McCaffrey earlier this spring as a guy that really – got after it and got better in the weight room in terms of bigger, faster, stronger. And then you think about last year with Luke, they had him learn slot and outside wide receivers. So you got to think his head was swimming a little bit in terms of just the info that he was forced to digest throughout the course of last year. But the receiver that stood out to me, Tyler, today in particular, and he stood out throughout the spring session as well, remember this name. Listening audience out there, undrafted free agent out of Louisville, Ja'Cory Brooks is somebody that, to me, I think he's going to have a real, real opportunity to carve out a legitimate role on this Commanders team next year. And he's a different body type in this room, guys. 6'3", 200 pounds. They don't have anybody like that in the receiver room. So I think his physical profile, along with the production here in camp, definitely going to help him out. Tyler, I appreciate you as always, brother. 1-800-636-1067. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, more of your calls. Ask Lanell anything. I was out there, boots on the ground, for day number one of Washington Commanders training camp. Ask me what you think stood out. Also, we got Mitch Tisler coming up in about 13 minutes. He'll join us right here on the Fan, one half of the Beltway Football Podcast. When we come back, though, rookies are going to have to earn it. I told you Josh Connerly Jr. was going to have to earn it. He isn't running with the first team offensively yet. There's another highly drafted rookie that's going to have to earn it as well. I'll tell you who next here on The Fan. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to be joined by Mitch Tisler, one half of the Beltway Football Podcast, with our guy J.P. Finley. You can hear weekdays 10 to 2 right here on The Fan with our guy Brian Mitchell. The fellas out on location at training camp earlier today. They'll be out there each and every day. Love hearing their commentary on everything as well. Also, before we get out of here, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by Jason Simmons, the defensive backs coach of the Washington Commanders. Asked him about Marshawn Lattimore, got up to speed about Trey Amos, talked Mikey Samra still, talked culture. Always good when I get the chance to catch up with Coach Jason Simmons. That's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour right here on The Fan. We'll also get you an update, major update, on where things currently stand when it comes to the Commanders and their pursuit of a return to the old RFK site. That will get you that in the 9 o'clock hour as well. Right now, I want to continue to take your calls. The 1-800, excuse me, 636. Almost lost it there, Bennett. 1067 is the number. 1-800-636-1067. You can tweet at me as well. It's at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. I mentioned earlier Josh Connerly Jr. still having to earn it. Talking about earning his spot along this Commanders offensive line. The other young man that I think will eventually start at some point this season that's not starting right now is Trey Amos at the outside corner spot. When Washington goes to their first-team defense during 11-on-11, it is Marshawn Lattimore at one outside corner, Jonathan Jones at the other, and then it is Mikey Samuels still lined up back in the slot. One thing I'll tease a piece of the conversation that we had with defensive backs coach Jason Simmons. Mikey Samuels still getting kicked inside. Not something that is going to be an every down thing. I think it'll be matchup dependent. Coach Simmons kind of alluded to it, but we'll see ultimately how that happens. But Trey Amos, to me, was able to realize it right from the get-go. Man, he just lights a room up. And I always like to talk about the person before we get into the football player. It seems like the person is just wired the right way. I follow him on TikTok, so I get to see some inside of his behind the scenes and things like that. Man, he's just a big kid. And I think the environment that they're fostering in Ashburn, when you get to have Trey Amos come in and learn from Super Bowl winning champion, veteran, Jonathan Jones, how do you not love that? Right? Getting coached by Jason Simmons, getting coached by another Super Bowl champion in William Gay. Like, he just gets it, and I think his energy and his infectious personality, you know, helps his confidence on the field. I don't know how long it'll take because Jonathan Jones can play. When they went 7-on-7 in the first team, it was Trey Amos, Marshawn Lattimore, Mikey. So we'll see. There's a real competition going on there. I expect Trey Amos to win the job at some point, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. The one thing that I'm curious to see with Trey Amos is when you think about why young corners in the NFL struggle out the gate, the collegiate game officiated a hell of a lot differently than, you know, the pro game, right? So when the refs come out there for training camp, it's always good. You get to get penalties, you know, called and things of that nature. Like, that stuff's important. That is what matters. But for Amos, it's baptism by fire. I wish that he was getting to go up against Terry McLaurin every day, right? Debo, love Debo. Different than going up against Terry, right? Noah Brown's off on the side field, not participating much. That's different than going up against Terry. But as far as Trey Amos, man, his length, his ability to turn and run, he's got greasy hips. That's a term they use in the scouting community, people. Greasy hips, meaning gets in and out of his breaks really fast. I think he's a supreme athlete. Where I'm looking to see, well, can he do it or can he not when it comes to tackling? Because, see, it's one thing to be cute, you know, playing defensive back in 7-on-7 when there's no pads popping. But how are you going to act in the month of November when it's a you know, toss to the right to Bijan Robinson and it's you and Bijan in the alley and you got to shed the block of a wideout and make a good effort play? Like, is he willing to do that? Does he want to get his face mask dirty? That's the big question I have with Trey Amos. But when you play your collegiate ball primarily in the SEC, the transition in terms of tackling in the NFL shouldn't be too bad. But definitely excited about Trey Amos moving forward. Can't wait to talk to Coach Jason Simmons a little bit later on to get some more detail and insight on just how impactful Trey Amos has been. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Jonesy, Little, Chris, we'll get to you after our guy Mitch Tisler, one half of the Beltway Football Podcast. The big man joins us next here on The Fan. The party continues here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped in to the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham. We'll take you up to 10 o'clock. Commanders defensive backs coach Jason Simmons going to join the program coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But I always say it, man, day one of training camp gives you first day of school vibes. We're super excited to see everybody out there. Super excited to talk to media members, players, coaches, so on and so forth. The boys are back in town. Because the boys are back in town, we'll go out to the Rude Guest Hotline for the first time this show. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We find our guy Mitch Tisler there, one half of the Beltway Football Podcast. Give our pal Mitch a follow on the X app at Mitch _ Tischler, T-I-S-C-H-L-E-R. What's going on, Mitch?
Not a whole lot. How you doing, my man?
I'm good. I appreciate you making some time for us here tonight. I was saying to the audience before we got going, day one of camp is such a tease, right? Because there's not a ton that you can take away, but I know astute observers like yourself are going to take something away from camp. What was your biggest takeaway, in air quotes, Mitch, from day number one?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the first week or so of camp, it feels awesome every day because it's just so great to be back around football, back around the guys, getting in the groove. Now, once you get after that first preseason game, you get a little bit of Groundhog Day over there. I think there are a lot of things you could take away from today. I mean, to me, I think the number one thing is seeing Von Miller walk down that stairway in the 24 jersey, which is a weird number, but you know, it is what it is. Hopefully it's the number of sacks he gets.
That would be crazy, wouldn't it? That'd be so.
But seeing Von Miller out there, I mean, listen, you can watch the D linemen, and they brought in a lot of bulk this offseason on that D line. When you look at guys like Eddie Goldman, Javon Kinlaw, Dietrich Wise, groups like that, guys like that. And those are guys that are brought in to almost specifically counteract what Philly has done. And you know, it grinds my gears to say anything nice about Philly or the Eagles, but they've done a hell of a job of building a team up there and have put together a nice blueprint for how to keep continued success, and that's built along the offensive and defensive lines. And so seeing a bunch of the big bodies that are brought in to help contain Saquon, hopefully help with the tush push and, you know, a lot of the run game woes, was an important piece because I think that was the biggest downfall of this defense last year. But when you watch Von Miller go through some of these one-on-one drills, you just see a different level of speed. Yeah. And yes, Von is getting up there in age, but the amount of knowledge that guy has that he's going to be on impart both across the rest of the D-line and on the O-line. Think about how much Josh Connerly, as a rookie, is going to be able to learn from a guy like that. I think it was just a big thing that kind of stood out to me today.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. And honestly, Mitch, like the high schooler in me was geeking out today seeing Von Miller out on the practice field. It was a guy that I wanted to be like when I was playing high school football, and it was just so cool. And now you think about it, man, like it's a star-studded roster all of a sudden. Marshawn Lattimore, Bobby Wagner, Von Miller, Zach Ertz, a bunch of guys that just have a bunch of pedigree across this league. You asked the devilish question yesterday to AP, you know, how do you feel about having the oldest roster in the league? Mitch, how do you feel about this team being the oldest in the NFL? Is it kind of just semantics, or do you think it's something that, you know, may impact them during the season?
I don't know if it's going to impact them during this season because DQ does a really good job of taking care of his veterans.
Yeah.
But I think a big part of it is the lack of talent that was on this roster when this group came in. I mean, you have 3 years of young players that there was essentially none of from the Ron Rivera draft, you know? So you're in a situation where, you know, you have to rebuild along the way, and they did it really well last year with a lot of those guys on 1 year deals. You know, hopefully it kind of continues as we get into this season. I do question a little bit, you know, the notion from AP and DQ that they want to build this thing to be a long-term contender. And the more you bring in these older guys, the less reps there are for the younger guys. Now it's a double-edged sword because those guys can teach the younger guys as well. So it kind of splits both ways. I don't think it's that big of an issue because I think when you look at the age, you have to keep in mind that, you know, their specialists are all probably the oldest group of specialists in the NFL. You have Josh Johnson as your third string QB. He's obviously way up there in age. You know, I don't know that those guys are going to impact games all that much and certainly impact that stat or that number about being, you know, one of the oldest teams. But, you know, I look at these old guys and these guys, not old guys, these guys who have been there, been around the block some, because, hell, I'm older than all of them, so I don't know what that says about me. But, you know, I love bringing in Javon Kinlaw and Eddie Goldman, but is that going to be at the behest of Johnny Newton getting more reps and getting to improve and get better because those guys, you know, are going to be able to step in and play right away? To me, that's kind of a question. I mean, I'm not. You can't say anything bad about Bobby Wagner, and I won't even entertain any of it. But Jordan McGee is a guy who I am very high on, and I think has a lot of opportunity, and I think he'll get some chances this year, particularly passing downs. He's a little more athletic than Bobby, can probably keep up with some of the linebacker, the tight ends a little bit better. But I think you can look at this roster and you can look at it, you know, kind of two different ways in terms of, you know, it being this older roster, and that you have a lot of guys that can impart knowledge, but at the same time, you know, the downside of it is that, you know, is that going to hurt some of the young players developing?
That's the big question. And I think you bring up a really good point with that. It's kind of like a double-edged sword, so to speak, as you put it, right? You don't want to, you know, stump the growth of the youngins, but you do want to put the best, you know, 12 guy or 11 guys out there rather at a time. So I definitely get the dilemma for AP and company. You mentioned this front four, and you mentioned the girth that they were able to bring. Something that stood out to me, dating back to the spring, Mitch, and I don't know if you noticed this as well, Frankie Louvu, when they go individuals, doesn't spend a whole lot of time with the linebackers. Saw him spending a lot of time with Coach Ryan Kerrigan during the spring, and then today on the first day of training camp, didn't spend any time during Indy with the linebackers. How excited are you to see his evolution as a pass rusher? And are you like me, Mitch, where I kind of feel like, and maybe I'm biased here because I'm a fan first and foremost, but I feel like he's just scratching the surface in terms of just how good of an edge rusher he could possibly be.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you look at Frankie Louvu last year, and when he was blitzing from the linebacker position, he was great.
Yeah.
He's so good at timing up snaps. I'm not talking about the tush push stuff. That is its own thing. But he is so good at timing up snaps. He was so good at reading the front four in front of him and finding, you know, creases and holes to get through to the quarterback. But when he lined up as an edge rusher with his hand in the dirt as an outside defensive end, he wasn't quite quick enough to give tackles a hard time, and certainly what didn't have the size to bull rush them. So he spent a ton of time with Ryan Kerrigan and the rest of the D-line in terms of, you know, getting those kind of pass rush reps. And I mentioned Jordan McGee earlier. I think you can kind of look at the way that this team is shaping up, and on obvious passing downs, I think your edges are going to be Frankie Louvu and Von Miller on the outside, and that opens up a spot for Jordan McGee to step in. You know, I think we're scratching the surface, and Frankie is an awesome player. He's really good and instinctual and all those different things. He's got to be much, much better this year with his hand in the dirt getting after the quarterback.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, for the most part last year, it felt like he was getting overpowered, overmatched.
Yeah, I could definitely agree. He's an undersized cat at the position, but as you just alluded to, one thing that can help with your lack of size is if your technique is on point, your hand placement is on point, so on and so forth. And look, Mitch, who better to learn from than Ryan Kerrigan, who knows a little bit something about getting after opposing quarterbacks. Mitch, when you
bring in Von Miller, doesn't hurt either.
I'm about to say,
I mean, I talked about imparting knowledge. That's an awesome resource for all these guys to use.
For sure. We're joined right now by our guy, Mitch Tisler, one half of the Beltway Football Podcast. You can follow him on the X app at Mitch_Tischler. Mitch, one other thing that, you know, stood out to me today was the undrafted free agent wide receiver, Ja'Cory Brooks. Made plays back in the spring, stood out today because he did some things with the first team offense. He also had a drop in the back of the end zone with the first team offense as well. When you look at, like, the bottom half of this receiver room, right, let's just play the Terry McLaurin game for a second and assume he's a part of this. Terry, Debo, Noah Brown, Luke McCaffrey, seems like four locks. What do you think about the other couple of spots and some candidates that could fill out the back half of that room?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to start with Michael Gallup just because you don't know what he has. And I think this kind of month of training camp and preseason games is probably about as important for him as it is for anybody else, because quite frankly, he's a little bit of a wild card and unknown.
Yeah.
Chris Moore is somebody who wasn't really on my radar a lot, but this morning, you heard Dan Quinn talk about him. And, when they went out for the first reps on offense, he was your other starting receiver opposite of Debo Samuel. And what I think is interesting about Chris Moore is that he started his career in Baltimore. So he obviously played with Lamar Jackson.
Uh-huh.
And then he was in Houston, played with C.J. Stroud. And now he's in Washington playing with Jaden Daniels. So he has a really good idea of how to play with quarterbacks who play kind of the way that Jaden was forced to at times last year, which was a little bit of the scramble drill stuff and getting out of the pocket and kind of keeping routes going. And to hear, you know, Dan Quinn early in camp mention his name specifically and then immediately see that as your, you know, as your other number one receiver out there, I thought was very interesting. Ja'Cory Brooks is interesting.
He's a different body type, Mitch, is the reason I like him. I don't even take too much stock into the plays he's made because it's not always against starters, but 6'4", 200 pounds, they don't have that in that room.
Yeah, and listen, you know, there's no glass half full of Terry McLaurin not being there, but if you want to put on the rose-colored glasses and be as optimistic as possible, you can talk about the fact that we're going to get a chance to see a lot of these guys get more reps, you know, one level up than they would be. You're going to see guys getting reps with Jaden who wouldn't necessarily do that with Mariota, with the second team, with the third team, on down. And so, listen, there's nothing good about Terry not being there, but if you're going to try and, you know, think of the glass as the most half full it can possibly be, it's the fact that we're going to get the chance to see Jaden throw to Chris Moore. He's going to throw to Ja'Cory Brooks. We're going to see Michael Gallup get a couple extra, you know, reps in there. And so, I think this receiver room is real thin without Terry there.
Yeah.
But certainly he's a massive difference maker.
Mitch, the revamped offensive line, kicking Coleman inside to guard, to me, I think made a ton of sense, especially when you consider I was going to call it a trio, but like every team's got it in terms of interior rushers in this division. Darius Alexander and Dexter Lawrence in New York. Then you got Oso Digizuwa in Dallas. Jalen Carter in Philadelphia. So obviously kicking Coleman inside will be huge. One thing that stood out to me last year when watching the run game down the stretch, Mitch, and this is no offense to the guys on the interior. They were banged up playing through injury. I get it. They got their ass kicked a lot of the times down the stretch, man, just to put it very bluntly. What do you think about this revamped offensive line and how important the run game overall, Mitch, is going to be to this offense? Last year, sixth highest running percentage in the NFL, running the ball at a 47.8% clip. So it's definitely a part of their DNA, despite Jaden Daniels, you know, being in the MVP combo.
Yeah, I mean, there was also a number of those runs that were Jaden having to keep it and you know, rushing from there. But
right. When
I look at this offensive line, I really liked what I saw from Brandon Coleman last year. Not that he was great all season, but he showed me what I wanted to see, you know, from a future guy who could be a multi-year left tackle on this team. Now, all that being said, once you bring in Laremy Tunsil, you throw that out the door because you're bringing in an all-pro, you know, one of the top five tackles in football, all those different things. I think Brandon Coleman is going to adjust really well to the inside. I mean, one of the things that he did well was he gets up out of his stance quickly.
Mm-hmm.
At tackle, sometimes he got a little high, and so that he struggled with that a little bit. It's going to be more important to think about that technique as he moves forward. But I think the second year with Bobby Johnson will go a long way towards helping that. You know, you opened up asking what I saw at camp today. And one thing that I really loved was after practice, we talked to Josh Connor. I talked to Josh Connerly a little bit. And, you know, he goes from being the alpha dog at Oregon to now walking in and being on the bottom end of that learning curve and having to look up to the guys like Laremy Tunsil and Andrew Wiley and company who were there. And what I saw during the one-on-one drills, which I really love to see, was, you know, Wiley gets the first reps at right tackle, and that's something that Dan Quinn loves to do with, you know, make the rookies earn their roles.
For
so,
sure.
You know, that is what it is. But Wiley steps up for his first rep, and Connerly is running to grab the bag for Andrew Wiley to block on. And so Wiley finishes the rep, and you see the two of them chit-chatting, you know, clearly talking about technique or, you know, footsteps and all those different things. And Connerly doesn't have to rush back and necessarily be the second guy in line. You know, he's making sure that he understands what is being asked of him. He's trying to get better. And he goes with the, you know, third or fourth team at times. But to walk in and not have a big ego as a guy who played at as big of a program as Oregon, first-round pick, everything, you know, that you can say about him is really impressive to me. And so when I look at the totality of the O-line, I mean, I'm very excited about what this can look like, particularly with the surprising news, if you will, from DQ that they're not ruling out Sam Cosmi for the start of the season.
Mitch, that knocked my socks off, by the way, brother. You know how freakish that is? 8 months, bro, to come back from an ACL? I've done it 3 times throughout my playing career, bro. It's why I do this now. Like, that's
brutal. I don't
know if
you saw him walking around and getting some work on the side field. No brace, didn't have a limp, you know, seemed to be moving pretty well. Yeah. I'm not saying anything about anything, but if Cosby's ready to go at the start, I mean, you're looking at a I always give a hard time to the, you know, PFF and other places that do O-line stats, O-line, you know, grades and numbers and all that stuff, because it's tough to really know what the guys are being asked to do play to play, you know, week to week. Last year, the offensive line, you know, ended up ranking, I think, in the top 10, certainly in the top 5 in pass pro. I think part of that is Jaden Daniels helping him out a lot in the back end. I think this legitimately could be a top 5 O-line, and I think that extends from both the passing game and also helping out a lot in the run. Because you look at these guys, and not only are they big guys, but they're athletic.
They can move,
and one thing that we saw from Cliff Kingsbury last year was him wanting to get those O linemen out front blocking. And it wasn't only on the screen passes and, you know, the pop passes to the outside. They had a lot of timing plays over the middle, like quick, you know, little in cuts where you saw O line kind of hold a block, 1, 2, 3, and then they're out trying to get to that second level, get to a linebacker, get to a safety. And the more athleticism that you're able to get out there, the more they're going to be able to do that. And I think when you look at, you know, this coaching staff sticking together as they did from last year to this year, they're going to be able to get deeper in the playbook. They're more athletic, so they should be able to do a little bit more. I mean, I think we were just kind of seeing the tip of the iceberg last year of what the Cliff Kingsbury offense can do, because I think they were limited in both time they had in the offense and also a little bit with the players that were out on the field.
I totally agree with you, my friend. I'm super excited to see, you know, how they bounce back this year and what wrinkles they can add to the offense. I'm also curious to see, and this is pure speculation on our behalf, do you expect them to, you know, lean into that advantage that they created for themselves last year, being the team that led the NFL in hurry-up offensive snaps?
Yeah, I think that's part of Cliff's DNA. I mean, I think they like to get the ball moving. I mean, today was the first day of training camp, and they were working 2-minute drill in red zone. You know, that's early on, and it's something that I love that I saw last year, and it was a particular contrast to some of the Ron Rivera years where you saw them practice specific situations and work on timeouts versus spiking the ball, work on throwing the ball out of bounds versus trying to get a couple of yards, you know, all kind of the little things, the little details. And, you know, they had 6 comeback wins last year. They had, what was it, 4 straight wins on the last play of the game. Yep. I mean, I think you saw that kind of play out during the season. These guys didn't step into the moment wasn't too big for them because they had drilled and they had practiced. And if we're talking day one of camp, they're working on, you know, hurry up and speed and all that stuff. And Jaden's going to have a second year under Cliff Kingsbury. So they're going to be able to get this thing moving. And, you know, we talk about the O-line. I didn't even mention Tyler Biadasz.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is crazy. But having a second year between Biadasz and Jaden Daniels, I think, is huge. Because you go from, you know, hoping that you know what your quarterback, or if you're a quarterback, what your center is thinking when they're looking over, trying to set protections and stuff. By year two, you're on the same page, man. Yep. You know exactly what Jaden's thinking. Jaden knows exactly what Tyler's thinking. And it just speeds up the entire process all the way around. And so I think that fast offense is going to continue to be a major part of what we see on Sundays.
You're getting our whistle wet for meaningful fall football, Mitch. We appreciate you bringing some time to us as always, brother. I'll see you out there tomorrow, man.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
That is Mitch Tischler, one half of the Beltway Football Podcast. Make sure you check that out on the Monumental Sports Network or wherever you get your podcasts. They're on YouTube as well. Him and that big-eared fella from NBC4, J.P. Finley. You can hear him here, too, 10 to 2, right here on The Fan with our guy Brian Mitchell. Always love catching up with Mitch Tischler. We got a lot more to get to. Final hour of power coming your way next here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. We'll get into the Terry McLaurin contract stuff in a little bit more detail here. I'll give you the latest on where things stand. Plus, we'll ask you this at 1-800-636-1067. At what point should the Commanders consider trading Terry McLaurin? It's next on The Fan.